As I got closer, I could see that it was a vehicle, a Lexus hybrid SUV. It was covered in mud and moss and sitting in the water up to its doors. I could see that the rear windows were blocked with survival gear. Tent, sleeping bag, cooking utensils, hunting rifle with boxes and boxes of shells, all new, some still in their plastic. I came around the driver's side window and caught the glint of a .357. It was still clutched in the driver's brown, shriveled hand. He was still sitting upright, looking straight ahead. There was light coming through the side of his skull. He was badly decomposed, at least a year, maybe more. He wore survival khakis, the kind you'd order from one of those upscale hunting safari catalogs. They were still clean and crisp. The only blood was from the head wound. I couldn't see any other wound. No bites, nothing. That hit me hard, a lot harder than the little faceless kid. This guy had had everything he needed to survive. Everything except the will. I know that supposition. Maybe there was a wound I couldn't see, hidden by his clothes or the advanced decomposition. But I knew it, leaning there with my face against the glass, looking at this monument to how easy it was to give up. I stood there for a moment, long enough for Metz to ask me what was happening. I told her what I was seeing, and without pause, she told me to keep on going. I started to argue. I thought I should at least search the vehicle, see if there was anything I needed. She asked me sternly if there was anything I needed, not wanted. I thought about it. Admitted there wasn't. His gear was plentiful, but it was civilian. Big and bulky. The food needed cooking. The weapons weren't silenced. My survival kit was pretty thorough. And if for some reason I didn't find a helo waiting at the I-10, I could always use this as an emergency supply cache. I brought up the idea of maybe using the SUV itself. Metz asked if I had a tow truck and some jumper cables. Almost like a kid, I answered, no. Then what's keeping you, she asked, or something like that, pushing me to get a move on. I told her to just wait a minute. I leaned my head against the driver's side window. I sighed and felt beat again, drained. Metz got on my ass pushing me. I snapped back at her, shut the fuck up, or something. I just needed a minute, a couple of seconds to, yeah, I don't know what. I must have kept my thumb on the transmit button for a few seconds too long because Metz suddenly asked, what was that? What? I asked. She'd heard something on my end.
She'd heard it before you?
I guess so, because in another second, once I cleared my head and opened my ears, I began to hear it too. The moan, clear and close, followed by the splashing of feet. I spun around, brought up my weapon. I saw six at first, coming at me from all directions, and behind them were another 10, 15. I took a shot at the first one. The round went wild. Metz started squawking at me, demanding a contact report. I gave her a head count, and she told me to stay cool, don't try to run, just stay put, and follow what I'd learned at Willow Creek. I started to ask how she knew about Willow Creek when she shouted for me to shut up and fight. I climbed to the top of the SUV. You're supposed to look for the closest physical defense, and started to measure ranges. I lined up my first target, took a deep breath, and dropped him. To be a fighter jock is to be able to make decisions as fast as your electrochemical impulses can carry them. I'd lost that nanosecond timing when I hit the mud. Now it was back. I was calm. I was focused. All the doubt and weakness were gone. The whole engagement felt like 10 hours, but I guess in reality it was more like 10 minutes. 61 in total. A nice thick ring of submerged corpses. I took my time, checked my remaining ammo, and waited for the next wave to come. None did. It was another 20 minutes before Metz asked me for an update. I gave her a body count, and she told me to remind her never to piss me off. I laughed, the first time since I'd hit the mud.